right, everybody, welcome to the very first episode of Doug's History Lesson here on the Everything Unscripted Podcast Network Patreon. I am your teacher, Professor Doug. And of course, my two students in the classroom today are Eric.
Hi.
And Stevie's here.
Cool.
All right. So basically what the history lesson is going to be is I've always considered myself quite the wrestling history buff. And that's not just because I look up all this stuff naked. I've done quite a bit of research over the last, very many years. So I'm pretty knowledgeable in a lot of subjects. So what these history lessons are going to be is they're mostly going to be the career retrospectives that you would normally hear us talk about on a Friday night. But now they're going to be exclusive here to the history lesson on Patreon. So what I'm going to do is tonight's history lesson is about Harley Race, which is the first ever career retrospective that we did. So we're going to do a deeper dive. I'm going to be answering the questions that the guys have for me on certain things that Harley did in his career, certain feuds, certain matches, whatever it may be, whatever questions they have, I'm going to do my absolute best to answer them and as in-depth as I possibly can. This will have, again, this is exclusive to Patreon. It's going to be every couple of weeks. At the end of the episode is when I'm going to reveal the poll for the next episode. So before we get into that, couple plugs real quick. Listen to Boxman and Smart, the Dirt Sheet Dudes, every Wednesday and Friday night, mixer.com/dirtsheetdudes. They can be found on all major podcast platforms. Usually around 10:15, 10:20 Eastern time. Wednesday and Friday. Listen to us Friday night, 6:30 p.m. Eastern time. blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted for the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast next Friday night, or this upcoming Friday night, depending on when this drops or when you listen to it. We will be doing a pay-per-view retrospective on Starrcade 1996. Could be a fun show. Listen to Daniel's Controlled Chaos, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, same channel, blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted, Sundays at 5 p.m. The next episode of Controlled Chaos, which may drop before this thing even drops, depending on how slow our editor is, will be an interview with his rapper friend Leon Thompson. I have no idea what this kid's rapper name is. Daniel's not up here to tell me. And, of course, listen to us Tuesday nights, 6 p.m. Eastern time, Eric Clement and I with the NFL Hard Hits podcast. So so make sure you listen to all those fine podcasts here on the Everything Unscripted Podcast Network. And, of course, subscribe to the Patreon, patreon.com/EU podcast, capital E, capital U. I don't think the E is capital. And you can listen to us. You can either join the $3 tier or the $5 tier. All right. So now that we got that out of the way, Harley Race. I'll start by saying this. Harley Race is a 7-time former World's Heavyweight Champion for the NWA. That's what he's most known for. He's also done stuff.
I'm playing with 8 times.
Huh?
I'm telling you, he won 8 times.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, the 8th time, they called him 7 times for the longest time. They finally, just a couple of years ago, recognized his last reign, but it was only 2 days in New Zealand. It was a 2 day. In 1984, he won the title in New Zealand and then lost it 2 days later.
Oh.
So, and they finally just started recognizing that like a couple of years ago.
Wow.
It takes forever for certain people to realize that. Yeah, I mean, they're still, I mean, honest to God, they still fail to recognize the fact that Antonio Inoki once won the WWF title, well, the WWWF title from Bob Backlund in Japan.
Oh, wow.
But, I mean, that reign still isn't recognized to this day. I mean, they talk about it, but it's never been brought up on WWE television.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Wow.
Yeah, even
yeah, me neither.
Even when they inducted Inoki into the Hall of Fame, it wasn't even brought up.
Wow.
So, but Harley Race, a lot of people do also remember him for his run in the WWF as the King of Wrestling. I most remember him when I was a kid, when I really actually started paying attention. I most remember him as the manager of Lex Luger and then the manager of Vader. Because that's when really started paying attention. So, all right. So let's get these questions going. Eric, we'll start with you. What's your first question?
Was there a wrestler he had a personal beef with and why?
A personal beef with? I'm not sure. I know there are wrestlers he loved to fuck with. I know he loved screwing with Junkyard Dog. There's a story. I forgot who told the story. I think it was Hillbilly Jim told the story. Harley Race, because he knew Junkyard Dog was very ticklish, Harley Race would come up and screw with him and start tickling Junkyard Dog, like underneath his arms, just to screw with him. And that was around the time when they were feuding back in the WWF.
Okay.
I don't know if that was necessarily, I don't know if that was necessarily a beef or what, or they had a beef. It was just, again, Harley Race knew how to get the Junkyard Dog. So he's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to do it. Here's a story. Harley Race apparently had a backstage confrontation with Hulk Hogan. Now, it wasn't necessarily a beef. When he was still with the NWA, Hogan and the WWF came to the municipal auditorium in Race's hometown of Kansas City. Race decided, fuck it, I'm going to prove a point, and he stormed into the locker room, surprising both the Funks. So this is probably around 85, maybe early 86, before Race got there, and Hulk Hogan. He punched Hulk hard in the ribs, sending Hulk falling backwards into a chair.
Damn.
And then Hogan tried to get out of the situation and said, Harley, I thought the first time I saw you in Kansas City, you'd have a great big gun. Race then calmly replied with, I don't have a great big one, and pulled out a .38 caliber, sending Hulk scurrying from the room.
Jeez.
So, not necessarily really a beef. It was just Harley basically just trying to prove a point and say, Hulk, I could beat your ass.
You probably could.
Yeah.
Harley could beat anybody's ass, I think. Because one of the things, too, is Harley Race was also known for his strong hand grip. And when he shook guys' hands, he would crush them.
Well, he was like a tough wrestler back then.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
Probably could be MMA.
I kind of have a good question I want to ask.
Okay.
All right. Which familiar foes did Harley Race defeat in his two National Wrestling Alliance heavyweight championships?
Which two foes did he defeat?
Yeah, like, and his two title defenses in the NWA. That's my question, because I'm not.
Okay, so, he's had a lot of, title defenses. I mean, to be
right.
honest. Okay. He's had big matches against Dusty. He's had matches against, he's had title matches against Flair, obviously, in the Funks. I mean, he won the title. The first time he won the title was back in 1973 when he beat Dory for it. And then.
Right.
Go ahead, Stevie.
Didn't he lose it to Tommy Rich and then he won it back?
Yeah, that would be later on. That would be the end of his fifth reign, and then the beginning
okay.
of the sixth. All right. So, all right, I'll get into that story because there's kind of a story there.
Okay.
All right, so it was in Atlanta, and Jim Barnett and Eric, if you remember, Kenny actually told this story when he was on.
Oh.
Okay. Jim Barnett is famously known for liking, in a kind of romantic way, for liking the boys. And he had it bad for Tommy Rich. So back in 1981, he decided to put the title on Tommy, even if it was just going to be for a few days.
Okay.
Now, Harley wasn't necessarily for this. So they actually...
Oh, he wasn't?
No, he wasn't. So when Tommy won, it was actually a surprise to Harley, too.
Okay.
And the NWA did not sanction... Well, here's the thing. The NWA did not sanction that title defense, so they had to give it that belt back to Harley like just a few days later.
Oh, okay. So he didn't really want to lose it to Tommy Rich.
I don't know if he didn't want to lose it to him or if it was an NWA thing. Because remember, the NWA back in those days, they had to have the committee meeting to decide who the champion was going to be.
Okay.
Because basically it was up to the NWA.
So they had the final decision.
Yeah.
Okay.
NWA, and this is the way Jim Ross described it, the NWA was kind of a non-violent mafia group. And they would determine... who would the champion or who the champion would be and all that. And even a lot of guys that would win the title, they wouldn't keep the title for long.
Right.
And they basically did it just for as like a favor to somebody. Like what, Eric?
Like when, what's his name, won the title? Kerry won the title?
Yeah, when Kerry won the title, it was basically done as a favor just so they could have a tribute to David. So, back in those days, and Harley would lose it. The funny thing about Harley losing the title is if he lost the title, he would usually gain it back not that long after. Like when he Like every time he would lose it to Dusty, he would gain it back just a few days later. You know, he lost it to Baba back in 1979 on Halloween, and he won it back a week later.
Oh, wow.
He would lose Baba again the following September, would win it back 5 days later. Then obviously the thing with Tommy Rich. So a lot of these title defenses were basically the NWA just saying, you know, with the exception of Tommy Rich, which they really didn't know about. A lot of it was just basically the NWA saying, all right, yeah, you know, we'll let this person have their moment. But then after, you know, the belt's got to go back to Harley.
Yeah. So he was just basically putting people over.
Yeah.
Or dead.
He would put them over, kind of get good faith with them. And then it would be, okay, you know, I put you over in good faith. Now it's time for me to get the belt back because I am the NWA's guy.
Yeah.
So, all right, Eric, next question.
What was his relationship like with Larry Henning? I know he was partners with him at first.
They were.
They have
yeah,
a good relationship.
They were partners in the AWA. So, I mean, as far as I knew, they had a good relationship.
Even outside the ring, like.
I mean, I would think. I mean, I would think so. I mean, I've never really heard anything that the two of them had issues. I know that they had, they had storyline issues back in 84 when Harley was picked to work with Larry's son.
Sure.
Yeah. So, as far as I know, they had a good relationship. Because they were actually so very similar because they were, you know, two big guys that, two big blonde-haired guys that, you know, had no problem beating the shit out of people.
Yep. Did they ever feud?
Not really, except for, like I said, when he was brought in to wrestle Kurt. And Larry would, come in and confront him.
Yeah.
But as far as the two of them ever having, like, a one-on-one match, that
never
really happened.
Mm-hmm.
But, all right, Stevie, next question.
I got another question. How did Harley Race get his nickname as the King? Do you know? The King of Wrestling.
It was a gimmick. It was something that the WWF came up with because the WWF was starting to do their King of the Ring tournaments, but that was basically just a house show. I believe another student just walked in the room. All right. Let me answer this one and then you can go ahead and ask. So it was mainly, the King of the Ring was a house show gimmick, and then they decided to kind of just treat the King thing as kind of they made the crown a championship, which
right.
would for a couple of years. And so basically they brought him in, and he had so much success, and he was such a big name that they brought in because they brought in one of the NWA's guys. So they're like, all right, well, we're going to make him the King. I mean, he did technically win the 1986 King of the Ring tournament that they did at a house show.
Okay.
So he technically did win the tournament. I mean, it wasn't necessarily – there's no footage of it anywhere.
Not that I know of.
Not necessarily recognized. I mean, they do talk about it. They do say, oh, yeah, he won the tournament in 1986, but you can't find footage of it anywhere.
Yeah, because there's no videos of it, so.
Right, yeah, because nobody was taking. I mean, if anybody took a video of it in 1986, it's probably crappy quality. All right. Daniel, you're in here. You have a question. Go ahead.
Did you talk about Flair and Race yet?
Not yet.
Do you think he was the perfect choice for Flair for the gold? The gold against Ric Flair?
Yes, because it was kind of a passing of the torch. Although there are rumors that Harley, you know, was actually thinking about no-showing. Yeah, he was thinking about no-showing, but however, he's just like, you know what? I got to do this for Rick. He's going to be their guy. He's going to be the new me. So therefore, you know, I'm going to do this. So was it a perfect opportunity? I mean, to treat Flair, even though Flair really wasn't a babyface at the time, it was a babyface thing because it was going to be in North Carolina. So to be the heel to pass the torch, yeah, probably he was the. Okay. You're leaving class? All right. So. But, yeah, so basically, yeah, Flair definitely, or Race was definitely the guy to pass the torch to Flair. All right, Eric, next question.
What happened in Japan that he almost got banned after his match with the Butcher? Abdul, the Butcher.
In Japan?
Yeah.
Okay. See if I can find it. There's not really much, hold on. See if I can look this up real quick. I mean, I don't remember ever hearing the story.
I was watching an interview and they mentioned it. So.
Okay.
I think it had to do with maybe they went to the stands or something. That's right.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I'm not necessarily see if I can find an article on it. Yeah, I've never actually heard that story.
Okay.
Hold on. Yeah, I can't I can't really find anything on here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, more than likely, it did have something to do with Abdullah, because Abdullah was very over in Japan.
Yeah. And he fought over there a lot, too.
Yeah.
All right. I can't find anything either.
Yeah, I mean, it just talks about how he, you know, wrestled in all Japan against Baba.
Okay.
Watch, somebody will find it and somebody will send it to me. All right, Stevie, you got another question?
Yeah, why did they, feud Harley Race with the Junkyard Dog at WrestleMania?
I mean, here's the thing. It was going to be the biggest crowd ever, and they needed marquee matches, and Harley and Junkyard Dog, because Junkyard Dog was over at one time there. I mean, it had been it had been a while since he was really over. But
yeah.
But basically this was supposed to be, or it was basically just meant it was a match for two guys that were going to be that were top guys at the time, you know, for the most part. I mean, and it was one of JYD's most notable feuds in the company. So
yeah.
It was basically done more as, okay, we need a big match on the card. Let's put these two together. Maybe Harley can get a decent match out of them, which the match may not have been great and it was short, but it really wasn't that bad. I enjoyed it because I like Junkyard Dog. So, I mean, Harley got what he could out of him.
Right. I mean, it wasn't a bad match. I liked it too, you know?
Yeah. So it was, like I said, it was done basically just for the purpose of, okay, let's get these guys on the card. Harley can probably get a decent match out of JYD. They really don't have to go long, but, you know, we got a story here. Because they did have a feud for a couple of months. They met on the one Saturday night's main event back in, what, January of 87? And
I'm not for certain, but I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it was the same Saturday night's main event where Hogan and Orndorff met in the cage.
Oh, okay.
Because they had that match, they had JYD and Race, and then they had Piper and Adrian Adonis. So. They were basically trying out a bunch of stuff for WrestleMania 3 on that Saturday night's main event. So, I mean, again, it wasn't a bad match. I enjoyed it. I mean, it probably wasn't a classic wrestling. I know Dave Meltzer hated it because I actually have the edition of the Observer where he wrote about how shitty it was.
Oh, really?
Oh, he hated Junkyard Dog. He would always call him Junk Food Dog.
Oh, wow.
Now, again, these issues of the Observer weren't necessarily great issues. Actually, you know, I don't even know if I have that issue anymore because I think I got that issue by mistake. And they weren't great issues of the Observer because that was back then when he didn't have a computer. He had to do everything on a fucking typewriter.
Nice.
So, but yeah, no, that was actually probably billed as one of the worst matches on the card, even though I liked it.
I didn't think the match was worse.
Yeah. So, all right, Eric, what's your next question?
What was his relationship like with Vince in the McMahon family?
From what I recall, I mean, it was a relationship of respect. I mean, when he was in Florida, Eddie Graham was friends with Vince McMahon, and Harley Race was tight with Eddie Graham. So they always did those, a lot of those NWA versus WWF champion matches they would have in like the late 70s, early 90s. They were basically set up by, you know, Eddie Graham and Vince McMahon. I mean, it was Vince McMahon for the most part.
There was like no blood or beef, anything like that.
No, I mean, he brought Race in. Here's the thing. Race comes in 1986. He's married by Bobby Heenan. He dyed his hair bleach blonde. And he came in at the time where the WWF did not recognize other promotions. Like, did not acknowledge the fact that they existed. So to kind of... put more of a exclamation point on your question from earlier, Stevie, WWF officials decided that in order to recognize how good of a wrestler he was, that's why he won the King of the Ring tournament.
Oh, okay.
Because, they wanted to recognize how good he was, but they didn't want to call him, oh, here's the 7-time NWA or 8-time NWA World Heavyweight Champion. They didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
Because at that time, number one did not recognize number two. And it's still like that. I mean, WWE doesn't talk about, I mean, unless you hear guys cut interviews like outside the ring, if they're being interviewed by Sam Roberts or Chris Van, whatever the fuck his name is, or whoever. Wrestlers are not supposed to necessarily recognize other wrestling companies. So, like, you're not supposed to hear, like, Jon Moxley's not supposed to talk about, you know, what's going on the other channel. Or stuff like that. As far as his relationship with Vince, I'm pretty sure it was a relationship out of respect. And Vince knew, because here's the thing, and we talked about this on the Pat Patterson episode. You know, this was around the time Pat Patterson was kind of coming in as head booker, but this is still around the time of George Scott and Jim Barnett was there.
Okay.
And, you know, they knew Harley. So they knew how to book him, you know, for the most part. And Vince wasn't going to disrespect the guy.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
So, I mean, he could, and I'm sure, like, nowadays, because he's so senile, he would. But back in those days, you showed proper respect to somebody like that. Stevie, you got another question?
Yeah, how come they didn't put the world title on Harley Race in WWF?
They probably didn't think... because he had a crown. And here's the thing. Around that time, he was not Vince's guy.
Okay.
So Vince really wanted to put titles on guys that were his guy. You know, like Hogan. And then Savage, because he was kind of able to mold Savage into what he wanted. And then obviously Warrior. Harley also, too, this was around the time where Harley's career was kind of not necessarily coming to an end, but he was in the later stages. I mean, he had already been in wrestling for 20 years.
Wow.
Well, hold on. Let me clarify that. I mean, this was 80 when he got there.
Yeah.
Or 88 when, or 86 when he officially. So he had already been in 26 years.
Right.
Yeah.
And he started wrestling in 1960. He was 17 years old when he started, and then he gets to the WWF in 1986. He's already 43.
Oh, okay.
So he didn't necessarily need it,
right? Because they had Hogan, you know what I mean. They wanted to put the belt on him.
Yeah, I mean, and he was basically there. I mean, you know, get guys over, and guys were supposed to get him over. You know, like I said, the JYD thing, and then he had the feud with Duggan, which. Didn't necessarily go anywhere because I don't think they ever actually had a blow off.
Well, they had a brawl.
Yeah, they had a brawl, but I don't think there was ever like a big blow off match between the two.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it probably would have been cool to see Harley win the WWF title, but again, because, and also you got to remember too, the WWF at the time was a babyface territory.
Yeah, that would explain it though.
Yeah. It was a babyface territory, and having a heel win the title for a long time didn't necessarily make any sense.
Yeah.
It would basically, a heel would win a title, and then a couple months later, the heel would drop the title to the babyface. So there's more of an answer.
Yeah.
Babyface territory.
Yeah. Yeah, that would explain it.
Yeah. All right, Eric, you got another one?
What kind of relationship did he have with the Nature Boy backstage.
Again, it was another one of respect. You know, like I said to Dango when he came in, of, you know, race thought about, because, you know, he knew he was getting pushed aside by the NWA. He thought about not doing the job for Flair at the 83 Starrcade. But then he realized, look, you know,
yeah,
this guy's the future of the business. I'm a team player, so I got to do this. And he did it. So it was more of, you know, it was the respect between the two. Because if he didn't respect somebody, he probably would not have done the job.
Right.
Probably not.
Yeah. So as far as I know, they had a good relationship. And then when Flair took on Vader in 93 for the title, I mean, Harley was in Vader's corner. And I remember Harley actually getting mad at Vader because Vader was actually taking stiff shots at Flair. And Harley was yelling at Leon, saying, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? And Vader was just saying, oh, I'm just trying to fire him up. And he did fire him up, and it was probably one of Vader's best matches.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
They had a good match.
Yeah. So, again, relationship of respect, which Harley had that kind of relationship with a lot of people.
Yep.
All right, Steve, you got another one?
He wasn't dick in the locker room, right?
No, he wasn't.
Sorry.
No.
Right, yeah, Steve, I got another one.
Okay.
Yeah. What was his relationship with Lex Luger?
Luger looked at him like a mentor.
Okay.
So everybody remember, Eric, I don't know if you remember, because I don't think you were watching around this time, but back in summer of 91, Ric Flair left WCW. So, and he left before the Great American Bash 1991, when he was supposed to drop the title to Luger. They were penciled in as the main event, and Flair decided, you know, fuck this, I'm out. It was either he leaves the WCW or he go to jail for murdering Jim Herd. I mean,
WCW made sense.
He hated Jim Herd more than Jim Cornette did. That's how bad it was.
Yeah.
Okay. So, anyway, so Luger's supposed to win the title, but Flair was going to obviously no-show the bash. I mean, he had made it perfectly clear, I'm not going. So basically what they did was they said that they took Barry Windham out of the match he was supposed to be in, because it was actually supposed to be Barry Windham teaming with Arn Anderson and Paulie Dangerously to take on Missy Hyatt and the Steiner brothers in a cage match. Which that was a complete clusterfuck, because Scotty actually tore his bicep and couldn't compete. He couldn't wrestle. So they took Barry out of the match because they're like, you know what? You're going to wrestle Luger and we're going to do a double turn. Because they brought in Harley to manage Lex Luger because they wanted to get, you know, some heat with Luger. So they had...
Right.
Luger pile drive Barry Windham on the world title, which it wasn't even a world title. It was actually an old tag title that they had to use because they couldn't get the belt back. They had to try to make a new belt for Luger because Flair had the belt because he took it with him. So in so then Luger or Harley Race became Lex Luger's manager, and they traveled together, which is, you know, managers are supposed to travel with their guys. And he became the mentor to Lex. And at one point, Jim Herd had talked about, you know what, you know, we got to cut some costs, so I'm going to get rid of Harley. And Luger actually went to WWE offices or to Herd or Dusty or whoever and said, no, don't do that. I need him. Like, if I don't have him, I'm toast.
Right.
So Lex Luger went to bat for Harley Race. Just like, you know, Harley Race, I'm sure, you know, helped out Luger quite a bit.
Well, I mean, Harley Race was a role model to the younger wrestlers. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, and Luger was no different. So they had a great relationship.
Yeah.
All right. Eric, next question.
Let's get into more of the feud with Funk. Is there any story there?
I don't know if there's necessarily any story. I think it's just more of it was another passing of the torch. And it was so like not really any stories there, but it was around this time after he beat Funk to regain the title. You know, he would defend the title up to 6 times a week and held it for almost 5 years, you know, excluding the short reigns, you know, by Tommy Rich, Dusty Rhodes, and Giant Baba that I talked about earlier. But it was this reign where he beat Terry Funk that it was probably his most famous reign.
Oh, and the Funks are the only brothers to ever win both of them to win NWA.
Yeah, they were, right? Yeah. Yeah, they... whatchamacallit? Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're the only brother duo to win, to both win the title. All right, so here's, in 1973, when Harley Race, this is obviously his first reign, right? When he fought Dory Funk. And was, so he beat Dory for the title in Kansas City. And fans couldn't believe it that he won. Now, and Funk was a babyface at the time. Behind the scenes, Funk pulled out of losing the title to Jack Briscoe because he said he had injuries in a truck accident. And the truth is that Amarillo promoter Dory Funk Sr. did not want his son losing the title to a fellow babyface. So Harley Race was under orders from the NWA to not let Funk leave the ring as champion that night. Now, obviously, the ending was a work because Funk did as he was told. But basically, the NWA had told Harley, hey, look, if he pulls some shit, don't let him leave the ring as champion. If you have to shoot. Like, if you have to break a bone if you have to.
Wow.
But, yeah, I mean, because, again, it was back in those days to where the NWA usually got what they wanted. Like, and they would tell guys, hey, look, you know, if this person doesn't cooperate, do what you have to do.
They were in the number one promotion, right?
The NWA, they were probably the largest promotion because they had several territories within the promotion.
Right. Okay.
See, because back in those days, Eric, championship wrestling from Florida was part of the NWA. Houston was part of the NWA, or, you know, Houston Wrestling, Georgia Championship Wrestling, World Class was part of the NWA for the longest time. Mid-South was part of them. Yeah, World Class, Texas. Also Amarillo and El Paso.
Was there one in Canada?
I don't know if Stampede Wrestling in Calgary was part of the NWA. They may have been, because Harley did spend a lot of time there.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, he did wrestle in Canada too.
Yeah. And he did defend the title there, so they may have had a working relationship.
Cool.
Steve, you got another one? No problem. Steve, you got another one?
Yeah, I have another one. Who do you think, wrestling wise, who do you think were Harley Race's toughest opponents?
Okay, it's actually a really good question. As far as wrestling wise and toughest opponents, you'd probably have to say the Funks. As far as toughest, like as far as wrestling goes. Now, as far as like brawling and stuff, you know, he's had matches against, you know, the Sheik where the Sheik actually, or they actually wrestled in the match. It was a bloody 2x4 with a nail in it match in front of 12,000 fans at Cobo Hall. But yeah, no, as far as wrestling wise, I mean, his toughest opponents probably had to be the Funks. I think one of his greatest opponents, though, it would be tied between Dusty and Flair.
Yeah, I would agree.
But as far as giving him the toughest match, it would probably have to be Terry and Dory.
Yeah.
All right, Eric, you got another one?
Let's see. Is there a reason why Race didn't stay in the WWF longer, or was it just because he was towards the end of his career?
It may have had to do the fact that he never recovered from the hernia.
Okay.
All right, so for anybody that doesn't know what I'm talking about, there was a match in 1988. Now, it was taped before WrestleMania. It was taped before WrestleMania, so he was technically still at WrestleMania, but he just had to be in a battle royal at WrestleMania, so it really didn't much. But back on a Saturday night's main event in March of 88, which was held a couple weeks before WrestleMania, but taped like the month before, he wrestled Hogan, and he was going for his diving headbutt on the outside through a table on the Hogan. Well, Hogan moved. And Race crashed into the table, and the metal edge on the table basically got into Harley's abdomen, giving him a hernia. So he had to take time off.
Oh.
He came back, had a few matches with that Survivor Series that year, and then wrestled at the 1989 Royal Rumble. Basically, after that Royal Rumble match, he basically said, you know what, I think I need to take more time off. So he never actually recovered from that hernia. I mean, he would still keep going till early 91 as far as wrestling goes, but he was never the same after that.
Well.
And hernias are not fun to deal with.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
No, they're
not. What, Stevie?
No, I just, hernias are, I never had a hernia, so I wouldn't know. I mean, I heard they're not real fun to have.
Yeah, me too.
Sometimes, like, a hernia will build up, but, like,
yeah.
like a lot of people will, like, have a hernia, but if it doesn't hurt, it's not necessarily a problem. It's when it starts to hurt that it becomes a problem. I mean, I remember a few years ago going to the doctor, and the doctor kind of felt around in my stomach, and she goes, "You know you have a hernia." I'm like, "I do." She goes, "Well, does it hurt?" I said, "No." And she goes, "Oh, okay, so then don't worry about it." So, like, technically, like, I had a hernia. I mean, I don't think I still have it because it never, like, necessarily flares up or whatever. But when it flares up, it's a pain.
Yeah, because my grandfather had one, so.
Yeah. I think mine did, too. All right, Stevie, you got another question?
Yeah, did he ever wrestle Bob Backlund? In Madison Square Garden?
I don't know if it was at the Garden, but I know he did as part of the...
Was it like for title or...
I don't know if it was title for title. It may have been title for title, but those matches always ended in like double disqualifications. And I'm pretty sure if you look it up, you can find it on the network.
So it... Well, my question is, I don't know if it ever happened, but if it was title for title and Harley Race ended up winning, what would they do? The WWF lost their world title. Just saying.
I mean, it's basically kind of just fantasy booking. But, like, if it were to happen, sure that, like, Harley would win it and then they brag about it for a couple of weeks, and then he would probably just drop it back. Because, you know, in these, you know, and again, a lot of these champion versus champion matches were just set up as just a way of showing that promoters can work together. But nobody had the intention of dropping their title to another guy's champion.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. So, like, if it would have happened, I mean, I don't necessarily know what they would have done, but, I mean, in those days, like I said, the matches were basically just like a gesture of good faith between the two promoters to just show that they could work together. But it was mainly like those promoters would tell their champions, now don't let him beat you.
Right. Well, he'd probably end up, like, dropping it back to him the next day.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I mean, more than likely.
Yeah.
More than likely. Yeah. All right, Eric, you got another one? Eric?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, do you have another question?
I have a fact.
Okay.
He studied to be a minister before he became a wrestler.
Right. I mean, it was basically because I think that's basically just how he was raised.
Right.
Harley also. You know, he was expelled from school because he beat the shit out of the principal. Because the principal...
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I heard that one, too.
Yeah. The principal accidentally kneed him in the back of the head.
Ooh.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Stevie, you got another question?
How did he become a manager in WCW?
Okay, so basically, you know, it was a whole thing with Luger, or like I mentioned earlier, they brought him in basically just so they could kind of give credibility to Luger as a champion. But then when Luger left, You know, Race was starting to manage other guys. You know, he started to manage Vader. He started to manage Mr. Hughes. He was basically, they were trying to basically make him like a Bobby Heenan or Jimmy Hart type manager, you know, in WCW.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, he would manage Vader, Super Invader, Vinny Vegas. I think he managed the Colossal Kongs for a little bit. And then Yoshi Kwan.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he was basically more known for managing Vader and Luger.
Well, he had some success with Vader.
Yeah, you know, he had a lot of success.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And he kind of became that mentor to Vader that he was to, you know, to Luger.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, all right, Eric, you got another one?
Yeah. Do you consider Harley Race best wrestler of all time or top three? Where do you rank him?
I don't know where I would necessarily rank him. He would be up there. I would probably put
better
him
than Flair.
Huh?
Ahead of Flair?
Yeah, well, because I've always said that Flair is overrated.
Yeah.
Okay. So I would probably put him in top five. I think the only other wrestlers that I would consider to be better than him of... Well, hands down, I think one of the basically the guy I think is the greatest wrestler of all time is actually Nick Bockwinkel.
Okay.
I agree.
So, I mean, I would put Nick Bockwinkel at number one. I would probably put Race probably at like number three or four.
Okay.
And I would probably say that, you know, it would be Bockwinkel number one, and this is not going to be a popular opinion, you know, Eric, with a friend of ours. As a matter of fact, when he edits this episode, he's probably going to edit this part out. But I'm going to say that probably Bockwinkel would be one, Bret Hart would be two, and Harley Race would probably be three.
Fair enough. How about you, Stevie?
I agree. I mean... I have to agree.
Yeah, I put him in top three myself.
I'd say Race would be three, Brett would be two, and, you know, so.
Bockwinkel
would be definitely number one on my list.
Yeah. So, and again, a lot of people are probably going to, you know, a lot of people are probably going to feel, you know, differently about it, which is fine. That's a loaded question.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll ask your brother one day.
Yeah. Oh, he's going to beat my ass for saying Bret Hart's the number two best wrestler in the world.
Hey, I have no problem with you putting him number two.
Yeah. I mean, and to be honest with you, there's going to be a lot of people that probably say that Nick Bockwinkel isn't the greatest wrestler of all time. I know my former co-host on the Rain Man of Wrestling podcast, Anthony, he hated Nick Bockwinkel. Or he didn't hate him, but he actually said that Nick Bockwinkel was way overrated. And when I mentioned many times about doing a show on Nick Bockwinkel, he'd be like, oh, nobody's going to want to listen to that. That's too old. It's just like... We're an old school wrestling podcast. You can't get any more old school than Nick Bockwinkel.
Yep. I'd like to learn more about him.
So, I mean, and that's what a lot of these history lessons are going to be about, is learning more about guys, you know, in the future.
Yep.
So, but, all right, who's – oh, Stevie, do you have any more questions?
Did he ever body slam Andre the Giant?
He may have. I think he's one of those people that actually is credited for body slamming him. I think he got him in a pile driver.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow.
Well, I know Hogan tried to power drive him at WrestleMania, but he couldn't do it. You know?
Yeah. All right, let's see. There's got to be a list here. Okay, hold on. Let's see what we got here. This is why I picked Daniel's computer to do this, show. I can actually look this stuff up on his computer without the microphone fucking giving out on me. Okay, hold on. October 13th, 1978. In a NWA World Title match that took place in Houston.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
So,
did he ever have a good relationship with Andre Harley Race?
I mean, I think they did. I think Harley was one of the guys that, you know, Andre was okay with. Now, all right, so going into this match, Andre proclaimed that he had never lost a match ever. However, he would lose this one. And this is a match where an attempt to have Harley win but keep Andre looking strong. It was suggested that the Giant slip on a pencil, allowing Race to capitalize. But Andre said the idea, "Hey, boss, I can't lose to a pencil." So Andre actually did a clean job. Andre actually did a clean job for Harley Race.
Well,
that's awesome. Which is showing a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I didn't know they like wrestled before, so you know.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's going to be one of those matches. If it happened in Houston, that means WWE does not have the rights to it. So
okay,
it's the Houston Library, and I think there's a streaming service for the Houston Library. I think so. You'd probably find it on there. But yeah, if it happened in Houston, WWE doesn't have the rights for it. Houston Wrestling is the only wrestling library that WWE doesn't own.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Do you think maybe that match might be on YouTube?
It might be.
It could be.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. Everything's on YouTube nowadays.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, Eric, you got any more questions?
Yeah, who was his first wrestling match again?
His first match?
Yeah.
Let's see.
Anybody we know? Or?
I mean, it was in 1960, so who knows? I think...
Is Bruno before his time?
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily say who his first opponent was, but it said he started in Nashville. He wrestled under the name of Jack Long, forming a tag team with storyline brother John Long. But yeah, it doesn't say who his first match.
And Bruno was his first. Bruno was before his time, right?
Well, not really. I mean, you know, he started in 1960. I mean, he was still young, and Bruno was basically up and at that point too. But yeah, as far as I know, him and Bruno never had a match with each other.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, as far as I know, it never happened. It
would have been cool.
It would have been something, that's for sure. It would have drawn a lot of money.
Yeah. Those are one of the dream matches we could put together.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a dream match that I'm pretty sure a lot of people have thought about. All right, Stevie, you have any more questions?
Actually, I actually don't have any more questions. I mean,
okay.
There's really nothing I could think of. So.
Yeah,
right.
Me neither.
All right. Eric, you don't have any more either?
Not that I can think of.
Okay. All right. So basically, all right. So that's pretty much going to end the history lesson of, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot.
Good
we
job,
probably.
Professor Doug.
Huh?
I said, good job, Professor
Thank
Doug.
You. Yeah.
Yep. Good job.
Thank you. I mean, there's probably a lot more we could have gotten into, but, you know, we did
right.
do a lot in the initial career retrospective that we did last year. So this is basically more. You can find it on the archives. But this is basically more to just answer some of those questions that may not have gotten answered.
Exactly.
So.
Great.
Now, we're going to try to do these history lessons every couple of weeks. Of course, they're going to be exclusive
okay.
here on Patreon. And on the next episode, now earlier I presented a poll to Eric, Stevie, and my brother. Well, I didn't present a poll to him. I presented them five polls. Each poll had a theme. Now we will do all these polls at some point. One poll
okay.
theme is AWA. The other poll theme was bad gimmick. Then the other one was ruthless aggression guys. Then there was WCW guys, and then there was Attitude Era guys. All those
okay.
will be polls at some point. Okay.
Yep.
Now. The poll I have chosen to go with, because it was a three-way tie between the three of them, because nobody could agree. The poll I've decided to go with to decide who the next history lesson is going to be on, and it's going to be weird, and Eric, you're probably not going to be able to post this in the wrestling in the 70s, 80s, and 90s group now without getting kicked out.
Oh.
We're going to go ruthless aggression.
Okay.
And your four poll options for ruthless aggression are going to be Batista, Snitsky, Paul London, and of Heidenreich. So.
Oh, all right.
So those are going to be the four
Sweet.
Poll options. Eric, you'll put it in Wrestling Umbrella and Everything Pro Wrestling?
And Twitter.
Okay. I'll put it in the old school group. I mean, they're probably going to rip my ass for going with this poll. But so we'll run that, and then whichever wins that, that'll be the next history lesson in a couple weeks. So it's either going to be Batista, Snitsky, Paul London, or Heidenreich. And
okay.
each one of those could probably tell and it will be an interesting episode, and there's probably going to be a lot of questions. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Well, at least from you two, I'm pretty sure there will be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree.
So, all right, that concludes the first history lesson. Of course, our subject today was Harley Race. We will find out soon what our next, who our next subject will be. We'll bring that to you in a couple weeks here on the Patreon. Of course, please subscribe to the Patreon, patreon.com/EU podcast. Of course, you can catch us on, you can catch the shows. blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted. We're on Stitcher. We're on Apple. We're on Spotify. But
yeah, right,
this has been fun. So thank you guys.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
You're welcome.
No problem. I am, of course, your professor, Professor Doug. This has been Doug's history lesson, and we'll catch you next time.
Later.
Bye.
Later.
And yet, after your first year in professional wrestling and that severe auto accident that you had, the doctor said you would never walk again, far less ever wrestle.
That's right, Gordon. But I've been proving people wrong since I've been in wrestling. I have proved everyone wrong with the world's title. I'm the only man in the history of wrestling to hold it 7 times. And I am here today to say that this, what is talking to you right now, there's nothing plastic about him. Now, up in the New York area, they're used to a lot of camouflage plastic. They've got people running around the city calling themselves what they're not. Well, I'm here to tell you and them right now, in order to prove me wrong, get off your backside and hop in the ring with me anywhere around the world. And I'll guarantee you that I'll show you that what I'm saying is absolute truth. In the last few weeks, you've had everyone else on here, and you've talked to everyone else, Gordon. Well, you're talking to the all-time best right now. You've got the Cadillac of the line, or the Rolls Royce, or whatever you want to call it. But I'm here to issue a challenge to any human being walking down the street of New York City or any other part of the great Northeast. Hop your butt in the ring with me and this see who the best man in professional wrestling is today. Whether it's me, whether it's you. But let's find out. Let's get it out where the people can see it. And I'll prove to you that all you have seen for years is total plastic, buddy. Total plastic.